Accession number 30342, reel 9.
So half this, okay, you start there and you get up in. We went on the patrol. Nothing happened, I was best. So we come back, just went back again. Someone says, where's Wilson? I left him there. I said, okay, we'll pick him up. So somebody had to go back and pick him up, then bring him back and say, I forgot about you. You didn't do his job then. Could have been there all the time, you think? And you think we got back anyway. And there was another time, I'm just going to tell you about this one. There was a German fighter plane flying around. I was there. One of our planes as well was flying around. And our plane was faster, but it took a long time to swirl around to come, you know, whatever, in the battle. Anyway, this old plane was flying around there, and a German shot this lad down. So we saw it, we had an idea where he had landed. So myself and Sergeant Dowell had to go out to find out what actually happened. So we went out to find where the aircraft was. The aircraft hadn't taken fire or anything, had. And of course the pilot was dead. And we were looking for identification marks. You always have a disc with your regiment and number and all that around here. Of course, he was a South African bloke, apparently, we found out. And he didn't have any discs on him. But what they used to have on your back of your shirt was your regiment and army number or something like that, you know, on the shirt, so it was distinguish who you were. So I had to get my knife out. Meanwhile, Sergeant Dowell says, you go down there. He said, I'll start back and give you a cover fire in case anything comes. So I've got this guy, and he's in the cockpit, and I'm trying to move about, looking for his identity. It's true enough, Saturday or something. And his eye, I sort of hung out like on a string, as it were. And it was moving about like this, you know, his eyeball, like his eye was. And of course, another plane, so I had to get my jackknife out and cut the collar. So it didn't take back, but he recognised who he was. And it was really dreadful, put his eye moving about like that. Anyway, got that, and I went back to the sergeant, like, and he says, okay, so we'll go back. So I went back, like, and I was a bit concerned. About 2 hours after, shock coming in. I was trembling, I just couldn't control it, like, with panic and fear and things like that. But at the time, it didn't bother me at all. Well, got an aftershock, I suppose, and all that.
And was that the first kind of casualty that you'd seen up close?
But yeah, that was it, really was, yeah.
Can you remember what kind of plane it was?
Well, it was just it might be something like a Spitfire or something.
So it was like a single engine?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And,
He was a South African lad, no, it was a shame because it felt really, you know.
And it had landed in, like, in the no man's land?
As it were, yeah, that's where it was, no man's land, you see. That's why you had to go, like, you know. And you had to get there because if the Arabs were trotting about, some of these fellows were still going about and these Arabs and things like that, you know, using different things like that, you know.
So you're in these dugout positions. How was the kind of company organised? And can you remember anything about the rest of the battalion, how they were organised?
Well, they were all more or less in bivvies or tents or whatever you had, or gas kits and whatever you could make, upshift, and the necessary thing happened to you in yesterday's trench. And you used to go down. It was like a little copse of trees where you used to go in there and you used to cook the grub the best you could with tins and stew and whatever. And you used to get your message and that was okay.
So what was your daily routine in this period in the front line? When would your day start and when would it end and what would it consist of?
Well, I suppose it was just a bit of a PE and exercise and something like that. Keep yourself in pretty fair shape, don't you know?
No, but you'd be in the line, opposed to the Germans. And you mentioned earlier one fella being asleep when he should have been on guard.
That's right.
So what were would you have had a fixed period where you were in your dugouts and facing the enemy, or how would that work?
We didn't sort of chase the enemy until we more or less told to take Green Hill. And that was when that was sort of went out as a group to sort of, you know, go to war, as it were, like, whether it's a just on patrol or anything.
And this is later on, though, isn't it?
Yeah. And, like you say, we were on patrol in the same night as Germans were patrolling Auschwitz.
Why, you know, so what was the logic of that, you know, that they, if they saw you or you saw them, you wouldn't open fire?
No.
Did you have orders?
Well, you see, if we had, yeah, I suppose when you think of it, there was only the same size patrol of the Germans walking through our lines as what we were walking through our lines.
So who was your NCO? Can you remember who it was at this on this patrol?
No. Well, not even Bill Creeves, probably Bill Creeves or
Bill. But he took a decision, well, we're not open fire, we'll just let them.
Oh, yes. I think we're all of us sort of a cast. You couldn't, you know, think about our lad was there. And the specialist fellow was sitting there.
And obviously, the Germans had the same orders that they weren't to draw attention to themselves.
Yes, I should imagine so. It's all like this gung-ho thing you see in the movies and all that, but it doesn't happen, you know.
Can you remember the first time you came under fire? Was that this period? Was it?
Oh, yes, it did. Artillery fire, more so than in it. And yeah. When you've been in slit trenching on a hill, the artillery fire was going over your head, but it was very, very close and very, very noisy and things like that, you know. And you could see all the flashes and things like that just put in the window.
How often would they shell the British positions?
Oh, say two or three times a night, perhaps, and that, you know. But you got that way, you caught it just took no notice of you, you know. As long as nothing happened, you didn't. It just seemed to accept it.
What about under kind of, you know, rifle fire? Were the Germans within range of small arms?
Only when they went there to try and turf the Germans out or attack them, and they, you know, that's when they come across.
So at this period where you were in these frontline positions, there wasn't.
See, we had a march, a distance before we start going towards up the hill to chase the Germans out. And that was when we saw tanks coming towards us and how vulnerable you felt. A little fella like you was just, all you had was a rifle, and you see a whacking great big tank coming towards you. But when we saw the aircraft coming, you know, with that shot chain going to the aircraft, lo and behold, it was a German aircraft, which also went just dived out and all that.
Was this during the big battle? Was this later on?
Yeah, more or less on the same day as it were. Like, you know.
Yeah. Now, so we'll get to that when we move to that. Now, when you're in these frontline positions, did they still try to have inspections and kit inspections and things like that? Were they still the
officers? No. What
about kind
of? It had to be sort of a tidy, you know, like a. You had to have a shame and things, you know, if you could, you know, and try to be respected. But there's no. There's no black or no brasses, because your brasses were shining in the dark and all this way, that they were quite dull then.
And what was the weather like at this period? You've mentioned that one of your colleagues being up recently.
We had some weather. That's one thing I couldn't remember. Went out one night, but it was a bit that picked up some stuff, some food or whatever it was we had to pick up. And we went out, and it was pitch dark, and you're walking along there, you used to have your bayonet, and the guy behind you, or the guy in front of you, would help you grab his bayonet, and he would help you as you're walking along like a, you know, like. And you get what you call these electric storms. I don't know if I experienced electric storm or not, but you had them there where we were, and you walk along in the pitch dark, and next thing you know, it'd be an electric storm. It'd be as bright as day, as bright as where it is today, and you could see for hundreds of yards, sort of thing. You know, and you hurry along, and it would go back again. Just as if I'd sit in the dark room, Switzerland light on, brilliant. You know, that's what they call next storm, I suppose.
What was morale like? You were on the side of this hill, you were in the rain. Getting shot.
Oh, I think the morale wasn't too bad at all. You know, it's when you start to lose the lads around you, you get a bit upset. But on the whole, you know, of course, the soldier always mourning, you know, for being a bone and things like that. You know. anything went right, first of all.
Was there any kind of trouble in terms of people getting into trouble with, you know, in the front line for, like, you know, you mentioned the man that fell asleep.
Oh,
did
yeah.
anybody get caught out?
Oh, no, that was just crossed over that for that lad. Otherwise, he would have been in trouble. Yeah, because, oh, I thought it was Sergeant Major. But just to get back again, when we were that Welsh lad who had got a drop with it, or had to tell me the further Welsh lad come along, we're going along there and we started to get attacked by the Germans. And we had you had to take cover, obviously, for the Welsh had been killed. And he got up and he was going to run away, so he's trying to take his kit off. He couldn't stop from, so he could run a bit faster. You have what you call epaulets on your shoulder, and your strap was underneath there. Because when you took that, you couldn't shake that up because we're still attached to your jacket. Minute. You started running away screaming and shouting. And you can't know. And that's, remember, that's the Soviet when they really got them.
And that was during the big battle?
Was it during the battle?
Yeah.
During the battle, yeah.
Now, before we get to that, I mean, according to the battalion history, you were in these positions for about, you know, 6 or 7 weeks in these forward positions. Now, over this period, what was people's health like? I mean, was anything like trench foot or any of that thing that, you know, that they had in the first, you know,
because
it was like a First World War kind of situation you were in, you were stuck in these positions.
You see, to get back to my sidekick called Mackay, there was a lad come around there with a donkey, and he was selling eggs, which they call earths, you see. So Mackay says, oh, no, he says, the eggs would be bloody useless, he says. So what is chicken? And we had to look after the chicken, and we should feed it on hardtack biscuits and all that. I don't know what hardtack is, but they're very, very, very hard indeed. And of course you had to tie a bit of string on the chicken's leg or ankle so we could row about a bit more of that, you know. And we looked after that, and Mackay called it Emma. Well, he called his wife Emma, not, I don't know, but this chicken was called Emma. Oh, Emma this and Emma that. And we look after it. And come a day, he says, oh, we'll have to eat it. Kill it. So he says to me, he says, go on, he says, wring its neck. I says, can't bring his neck. So he couldn't bring his neck. Couldn't get him. Tommy Monroe wouldn't bring his neck either. So we decided, Mackay decided to shoot it. We went to shoot a chicken. There's left with an army rifle, that, you know. So we got this chicken and he shot it. And we cooked it and all that. And this chicken, it was been, probably chicken, was years old. Really tough and all that, the chicken. And when Mackay was hit, he was going, oh, poor Emma, oh, poor Emma, he was eating his chicken. And that stands in my mind, tears today as well as so many years ago. We nearly cried, and oh, poor Emma, poor Emma. But it was really tough.
How did you cook it? Did you have to go further down the hill to cook it up?
Well, more than put it, he still tied on his leg, that, you know. We just shot it there and then, you know. So nobody got hurt in that, you know, obviously. But before ever got the way there, I'd been looking forward to it. It cost us, whatever it cost us, we couldn't afford it. And it was terrible food we got out of it. Poor ever.
Now, were you troubled at all by enemy aircraft? I mean, you mentioned this incident with a British aircraft getting a South African getting shot down.
Yeah, well, I think I said when we were thought about sharing our aircraft coming, it wasn't our aircraft that
yeah, this,
the Germans
is,
that was strafing us.
Yeah, this is like a little bit later.
Yeah.
Now, can you remember just in this early period, you know, before the battle, was there any? Have you got any kind of memories of any German prisoners being taken or any other Allied other British units?
No, I remember one lad. He was the first casualty, and everybody should know him. I can't recall his name, but it was like Dick, Bob, Bill, whatever. And as soon as he got killed, we were talking about the body. We weren't talking about the lad himself. I thought that was, you know, that was the beginning of realizing that here we are, like,
the first casualty was that in your original positions?
Yeah, that's really the first one.
Can you remember what happened to him?
He was killed. I don't know whether.
So he wasn't in your platoon, though. He was just in the company.
He was just a boxy private, like, what the. It was nobody special. Just one of the lads.
So in this kind of 6 week period, you weren't under kind of direct small arms fire at any time in this period?
No.
So it was shelling and mortars and stuff?
Not bombs, artillery fire, basically, and all that.
So what do you remember about the move out of these positions?
The moving up?
The move out of those positions into the, you know, into the battle. What do you remember about that?
Well, I think, in my ignorance, we're glad to go in and get on the board and all that sort of thing. And, actually on the move, this Sergeant Dower mentioned, we had a lot of machine gun fire and things like that. We had to take cover, and we were like a valley somewhere, like a stream or a river, and he got stuck in the stream, this Sergeant Dower. And he couldn't get in, he couldn't get out, either left or right. He had to stand there waist deep in this stream or river, or it was, for quite considerable time. And so I don't know what actually, how it happened. This is a guy that was with the aircraft with me, that was giving me cover and fire. So whatever happened to him that way, I don't know. But I've been sorry for him being stuck in that water all the time. I think.
Can you describe, you know, that deer that you, this attack, actually, how that was organised, you know, how many of you were there, what were you trying to do? You're in a valley area.
We started having to go along and up a hill, and you had to spread out as much as you can. And of course, when you spread out, you can only basically see what's in front of you within a, say, there is 10 yards or whatever, you see, because the other guys are alongside, you know what I mean? And you're only looking after yourself or the next guy who's with you, and you don't know what's going to be happening, because you couldn't see them, because they were up the hill, we were going up the hill, so we were almost like shooting ducks, as it were, like, you know, setting ducks on your body. Yeah.
Were you aware of what the other companies were doing? I mean, you were in B Company.
We don't know, we had to go on, you know, we don't know exactly what they're going to beat. We didn't know.
So what was Dorian and Dowell? How were they, where were they?
Well, Dorian was there alongside me. Yeah. And Ballantyne Jones, Jimmy Cairns, I told you about Jimmy Cairns one time in the battle room. He got shot, but they all dropped down. And Jimmy, we had to go on in this. Jimmy Cairns said, don't leave me. So I had the officer said, come on, leave him. So I gave him my first aid dressing. You know, look after himself a bit, and I think, well, put on. And we had to leave the poor lad. We didn't want to be left. And we went over Babington Jones, and we come to a wall of cactus with these big pines. And so I took me baited off my rifle about halfway through this cactus to go through there to get through to that side. And this Babington Jones gave me a little resting down, put that back on again. He says, we're just going to battle our way through. Which we did do, force our way through and all that. And I managed to get a big pine up this cactus right through my knee. Right inside me, it was good about 4 or 5 inches or whatever, inside my knee. And it went on, and Babington Jones got shot, he went down then. And he was, when the Germans finally got him, he was lying there, he was Lieutenant Dorian, and Dorian says, I'm afraid we'll have to give ourselves up, he says. You know, he says, no chance, because you could tell. And I could see a German coming towards me. He just reminded me of Billy Bunter. And I'd been leading the ball all the time, man, you know. And I saw another German coming along, and he must have been shot in the stomach, he's holding his stomach in. Whether it was us and all that, you know, must have been dead, so we're killed. I don't know how I feel. So Dorian said, you have to stand up. I said, well, you stand up. I said, you're begging for the service, and I'm not standing up. I said, but do it together. So we stood up together and put my hands up and shouted, comrade, comrade, and all this, you know. And the next person said, Tommy, for you, the war is over. That's what they said. And the fact that was a stock phrase. And we just went forward, and the Germans started to look after the wounded. And we're very, again, that were very good, the wounded. And they sent the sergeant down, we're afraid, no, Barrington and Jones, and we're afraid our legs got to come up. And he just killed over and died, I think, there and then.
How was Barrington Jones hit? Was it a bullet wound, or was it a...
Bullet wound, yeah. Must have been, I think it was in the thigh or something like that, you know, probably. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And the medics must have been quite common people, these German doctors. And there was some guy in the hell of a state. And, that, you know. And when everybody finished, it says, was anybody else at all? And I said, well, I says, I've got one of those spikes things in my knee. See, he tore the leg up like that, and just got a scalpel, what you call it, and he just made a cross like that, wrote my name, and his leg just come out. He just put it out and put some kind of dressing on, but no, had a second, but I think I had a tore it on him. But my knee had swollen up, just like a little football by then.
Now, this was the final attack in which you were taken prisoner. Now, last week, you mentioned Ted Edwards. Can you describe how that incident fitted in?
Well, Ted, was this a machine gun there, pinning us down, I suppose.
Was this in this battle? Was this
in the same battle?
On the same day?
Yeah, probably must have been, yeah. And Ted Edwards, this little, big, significant, we used to call him half pint. He, because we all had grenades in our pouches and things like that, you see, hand grenades. And he threw this hand grenade in this machine gun nest, and it didn't go off. We're all there, you know, and you threw another one, and that didn't go off. And you threw a third, and that went off. That must have killed and wounded the Germans, because when they went in, so the two grenades just lying there. That's as much as I remember what Ted Edwards was like. And of course, when I had been taken prisoner and had went down and done my name and all that, and come down and asked, I had grenades in my jacket, and I thought, what do I do with these now? If they catch these on me, that knows. So I just took them up and just threw them away, because the pins were still in all that, you know. So I just threw the grenades away, because I thought if it's CDs, you know.
Now, in the battle on the day that you were taken prisoner, the various documents talk about an artillery barrage and marching up behind an artillery barrage.
Yeah, well, they had what you call a creeping barrage, and sometimes we advanced so quick that the creeping barrage was hitting our own men. Following you, they were going so far, the creeping barrage should go like that, and you should go like this, but it finished. We were slower, we were faster, and sometimes it was dropping with our own men.
And so there were casualties from the British.
Oh yeah.
Were you being shelled by the Germans as you were coming up as well?
Probably were, but the machine guns and the light fire and all that was the things that was getting results from that.
So on this final day, how long, can you remember anything, you know, that actually how long the battle lasted and how far you got up the hill?
Well, I must have got about two thirds of the way, I should think. And another thing that sticks in my mind now is, probably sounds a bit far-fetched, but the amazed troop. I was talking about this one bloke, a German officer, or sergeant, was sitting talking, he could talk English and that, you know, which had him like. And he says to me, he says, you're lost just over there, you know. He says, go on, he says, you can go. And if you got your revolver in his hand, I thought, no. Yeah, you go ahead and say that. No. I thought to myself, you just wanted to give me an example. Don't try and barely escape because you get shot. And I thought, if I make the move he was telling you, I would have got shot. And I to this death, whenever it's like, oh, no, it could have gone away. Well, that sounds a bit, believe me, Tom, it's quite true.
So you were going up this hill as a company, as a company of
platoon.
So you're really only aware of your own platoon. How long do you think the battle lasted? How long did it last from the start line? You know, the.
Oh, I wasn't much more about 20 minutes or more, I think, before we got there, like, and got involved. And of course, the Germans were probably could have wasn't might have went on that way, or we just went, you know. You only know what happened to an individual group, because the people that looked after us had all the bunch there, wound up with bunches here and bunches there.
So out of the platoon, did anybody manage to get back? I mean, was there anybody that wasn't?
Well, I couldn't get back to say they did. I don't know, because I heard a story about that Sergeant Major Thomason, the nasty one. When the blokes was coming back and they got and had put a kit on them, the Ben Gun carrier, he took all this off and said, go and get back there, go and get back in there, he says, and I'll be with you. And he put all his kit in the Ben carrier and drove it away and left all the bones behind. That's as far as I got. And that was the one that was all about athlete and great bloke and all that. You know.
So in your platoon, though, there was Dorian, was your officer was taken prisoner.
Yeah.
And what about Sergeant Dowell? Was he?
He must have been taken prisoner.
But he wasn't actually with you.
Well, no, you see.
So on your little group, you were up there. You were.
You see, it's like where you are now. There were three houses down there. That's where he could have been. You know, but all you're concerned about is this little patch where you are.
So at the moment you were taken prisoners, you were yourself and Dorian.
Yeah.
Was anybody else with you at that?
Well, Barrett and Jones was there, and that Turnbull, he had a Thompson machine gun. Because when we put our hands up there, I guess they gave up, we were obliged to. He stood up as well, and he had a Thompson submachine gun, and they've got a strap there, which a rifle to carry sword, but when it's done with a machine gun, so when he stood up like this, as I'm standing up now, the machine gun swung around, you know, which window was I going to hit back the bottom of your arms. And of course, probably boy is trying to use the machine gun to shut him. Whether he got killed or not, I don't know. Well, I thought he got killed, but apparently he did not got killed. But the machine gun, you can imagine, like, just sort of swinging around that, you know, your arms. Right?
What was your impression of the Germans when you first saw these? Because I believe the first, when I asked you earlier, you hadn't seen any German prisoners, so these would have been the first Germans you saw face to face, close up. What impression did they make on you?
Well, they didn't sort of, they weren't, I would call it really nasty, because I had a brother, and I thought he said, my brother's like, just the same, me, so general. And they just, you got their blood and something. And they weren't really, the ones I come across at that particular time, but of course I met some nasty ones who took a prisoner for the back of me. But these on the whole, they weren't too bad, really.
We didn't
do anything nasty as far as I could see.
Now, you got halfway up this hill, three quarters of the way up this hill. You've talked about Ted Edwards.
Yeah.
With the grenades. About how early was that? Was that early in this attack that this happened?
That must have been early in the attack before we took prisoners, otherwise I wouldn't have known about it. Yeah.
So you knocked out this machine gun post.
Well, he did, yeah.
Yeah, and you were you aware of the other companies and what they were trying to do? Because apparently it was an attack.
No. Just
did anybody explain anything to you before the attack? Tell you what you.
You see, it's always explained, but you don't know what you're going to see or what you're going to come across, do you? Because you don't know that they've got their troops in there. You're walking up there and then you find out the hard way when the Germans are coming over to you.
And so, in terms of the Germans and their equipment and so on, did any of that make an impression on you? Did you have it?